Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Mr. Host at 7 o'clock. Right now, on this particular day in history, on the 26th of November, back in 1916, the President of the United States at the time, Woodrow Wilson, would announce that there is no more room in the world for positions of neutrality, effectively saying you have to pick a side in wars to come. Very interesting. I read an interesting article today from our own Department of International Relations and Cooperation around the difference between neutrality and a non-aligned position. Quite an interesting read. Maybe I'll put it up on my socials throughout the show. In 1924, though, on this day, the Mongolian People's Republic was proclaimed. 1941, on this day, the Japanese naval force would begin their movement towards the east, towards Pearl Harbor, and we all know how that story ended. 1948, on this day, the first Polaroid camera would be sold for $89.75. It would, of course, be the prototype that would be used for the next 15 years for Polaroid cameras. 1965, on this day, the French would send their first satellite into orbit. It would be aptly named Asterix after the French cartoon, yes, the French comic. In 1983, on this day, £26 million worth of gold, diamonds and cash was stolen from a warehouse at Heathrow Airport in one of the world's greatest robberies. Wasn't a couch, but it was an airport. And 1985, on this day, Random House would buy the Nixon memoirs for $3 million, setting a record for those memoirs. You're tuning into the SAFM Market Update. I'm your host, Jimmy Muyaha. And on the show today, we are taking a look at more company numbers. We're taking a look at Zeda numbers. We're taking a look at Vukile Property Fund Limited numbers and African Bank numbers. We've got conversations with all three company CEOs around the performances. In the case of Zeda and African Bank, it was full year numbers. In the case of Vukile, it is half year numbers. So we have a second half of the year to look forward to from that perspective. Then we've also got a conversation with the South African Iron and Steel Institute around the potential dangers of a new competitor coming into the landscape, a competitor that isn't even in South Africa, but could potentially be jeopardizing the steel sector in South Africa. We're going to look into that story in a little more detail and see what to make of it.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
But let's start the show off on the right note. Let's start by taking a look at the markets and how they've been moving throughout the day. Yesterday was a torrid day. Today was a little bit better, depending on, again, which side of the market you sit on. I'm joined on the line by wealth manager at PSG Old Oak, Skulk Lowe, to take a look at the market movements throughout the day and see if we can make sense of them. Good evening, Skulk. I would say it's lovely to speak to you, but the Rand's at 18 Rand 20 and can't go away for Christmas, and it's your fault. How are you, Skulk?
Your glass is so half empty, Jimmy. Come on. Let's look at this market for a second. I mean, we've got a market that's 60 basis points up, and usually when we sit around here, you sort of give me a very, very hard time about markets being negative. Yes, we do have the Rand that's being negative. I don't think South Africa is to blame in this sense. I mean, this case, we do have Trump now coming out of the blocks. We know that his first presidential speech will only really come through on the 20th of January next month. But you already saw yesterday that it's all danger talk coming from his side. You know, sort of reprimanding Mexico already yesterday, stating that, well, that's it. I mean, he's going to slap tariffs 25% on Mexico, and he's going to be slapping 25% tariffs on Canada, and until they be able to manage the actual immigration laws from their side. Now, this is unbelievable. He sort of solved the problem of the 2016 wall that he wanted to build, this time by just a simple tweet, because hell, I mean, all hell broke loose. The Mexican president already said he's going to do everything in his power to sort of look after this. And suddenly markets are a little bit nervous again. You know, we know South Africa, you know, the U.S. is quite a big trading partner for South Africa. And yeah, that was one of the main reasons, I would say, why the Rand actually lost a bit of ground today.
Oh, we're back to getting all of our market information from the X platform. Donald J. Trump, we knew this was coming. We knew this was going to happen. I didn't expect it so soon, though, Skulk. I thought he'd at least wait until he was inaugurated officially before causing havoc. But it seems that is not what Donald Trump would do. I suppose it's my own fault for believing that he would behave rationally the second time around, right?
Come on, we all wish that they would do this. I mean, this just kept life so much more interesting having him there. Yeah, I think, I mean, to the listeners out there, you know, we sort of lighthearted about this comment. And I think the most important thing is what's the real implications? Now, you know, we know he mentioned quite a few things with the build-up with this election process that he had quite a few promises he made. One of these, you know, was this tariffs. And I know one of the promises he also made is he's going to be the president that's going to bring inflation down. He's going to be that president. Well, I'm looking at this, and let's forget about the tax cuts that he's planning. Let's forget about, you know, those type of things. Let's focus on the tariffs. If you're going to be raising tariffs, I mean, we're talking about 25% immediately on countries already, you know, Canada and Mexico. He's already mentioned that he's going to hit China with tariffs 10%. I'm unfortunate going to be differing, you know, with him. He's going to be, this is definitely going to be inflationary. And I would say this is a little bit worrying for me for 2025, because we already sort of braced ourselves. Now, September this year, we had the first rate cut from the US. We also had in South Africa. And we were sort of looking towards 2025, stating that we're going to have a few rate cuts and all will be fine. Now, If you know, these Trump trade or these Trump promises, you know, tariffs, rate cuts, those type of things is going to come into fruition, this is going to be a problem. Why? Because remember, a lot of American agricultural, also, well, I'm talking about the immigration laws. Sorry, the immigration laws. A lot of these immigration laws state that the Americans use them, the Mexicans and the Canadians, to come and work in the agricultural and let's call it building and construction. If that's just going to diminish, that's going to be an interesting factor. If there's going to be enough people that's going to be able to do the jobs, and if they're going to be happy with only 2.5% salary increases per annum, I think it's going to be an interesting year, 2025. I think I'm going to be definitely setting my alarm for the 20th of January to listen to the first, let's call it, Trump speech.
Well, Skulk, the logic does support your argument in that if we have a simple economics lesson here, if you impose a tariff on something that is imported, then the importer is the one paying the tariff. So US companies will pay the tariffs and then pass that on to US consumers. So it will only create an inflationary environment inside the US and very little inflationary pressure outside of the US. But that's a story for another day. Skulk, I want to take a look at Pepkor before I let you go. They gave us an update on their performance. They own the likes of Pep, Ackermans, Refinery, Techie Town, Shoe City, and a bunch of other assets within that business. How was the year for them?
Wow. I could just go, wow, because this is until end of September. And I'm going to get you back to why that's important. This is just sort of following up on Mr. Price that we had, I think it was last week, Jimmy, if I'm not mistaken. Mr. Price had a similar announcement or similar report. And they also, you know, sort of shot the lights out. If I can recall, Mr. Price, after their announcement, the share price rose close to 8% that day. You know, Pepkor today, you know, just shy 5% in an environment where, like you mentioned, where the rand actually weakened. So what happened? I mean, they actually mentioned that their results were really, really good. I mean, revenue increased by just shy of 8%. You know, the earnings were looking good, really good. Dividends increased. But I think the most important thing for me currently, and Mr. Market is telling us, is we are now starting to feel the effects of this whole two-pot system. You know, Mr. Price mentioned it back then. Two-part system. Jimmy, I've already heard figures like over 50 million rand being, you know, withdrawn through the two-part system. Now, that you know, a few, let's call it people that's way more intelligent than I am, has mentioned that at least half of that money is going to find itself into the retail system. You know, things that people are going to be buying for Christmas, buying for themselves. I want to be naughty. I'm going to be really naughty because that implies that half of them will be, you know, paying off their debts. I think it's going to be way less. I think more people are going to be spending their money with the likes of the Pepkos, the Mr. Prices, these retail companies that we're currently seeing. And it's definitely evident in the share price movements, and it's definitely evident currently in the likes of the let's call it the financial results.
Well, you only live once. Black Friday is coming up this week. Skalk says spend all your money. That's not what he's saying, but he is reflecting on the numbers. Thank you so much, Skalk, as always, for the time and for the insights. Lovely to chat to you. Skalk Low of PSG Old Oak joining us to take a look at the market movements, some company news, as well as what's been driving some of the market sentiment.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
As local and international tourists get ready to flock to popular destinations like Cape Town and Durban this holiday season, South Africa's hospitality sector seems set for a resurgence. But despite this enthusiasm, many hospitality shares are still trading well below their pre-pandemic prices. Tune into the SAFM Market Update tomorrow evening at 6:45 as Varshan Maharaj, Portfolio Manager at Allan Gray, explains why undervalued hospitality companies offer a long-term growth opportunity for patient investors. Brought to you by Allan Gray. More than 50 years of long-term investing. Allan Gray is an authorized financial services provider.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
There's a company in Zimbabwe called Dinsen Iron and Steel Company, shortened, it says DISCO. I didn't make up the abbreviation. The abbreviation is there. Make of it what you will. They have finally gotten their production online earlier this year for one of their big plants that is a steel producing plant in Zimbabwe. Now, this is interesting because we, as South Africa, still import quite a bit of steel at an affordable rate, despite the fact that we have the likes of ArcelorMittal and an entire steel sector in South Africa. We're going to take a look at this. We're going to take a look at what these developments mean for the steel sector. And joining me to take a look at this is the Secretary General of the South African Iron and Steel Institute, Charles Dedenham, to take a look at this and see if we can understand it. Good evening, Charles. Thanks so much for taking the time. These developments, I mean, obviously developments outside of our borders, nothing much we can really do about them. But I want to start by taking a look at the state of the South African steel sector. We're dealing with tariffs, we're dealing with duties, we're dealing with a scrap policy. There's a lot of confusion and back and forth and everything. What's happening at the moment?
Actually, at this point in time, a lot of uncertainty with regard to policy. I think policy uncertainty is maybe one of the prime things that's hampering the steel industry at this stage. Demand is very subdued, so we will be seeing about 13% drop in demand measured against last year. And we will still be looking at about 30%+ imports of total steel demand, which is actually leaving quite a small amount left for the local steel mills to supply into the local market.
Now, Charles, part of the uncertainty that exists was, from a policy perspective, is obviously that uncertainty that's aimed at protecting the sector. We had been hoping that the government would give us some policy certainty so that the local manufacturers can at least have some certainty around how much of the market they can actually supply. If we don't have this uncertainty and we continue to see the demand come down, but we also continue to see the increase in the imports coming into South Africa, what does that do for the steel sector? I mean, obviously, it's already under pressure. It can't really sit there and take much more of the pressure from all sides, can it?
No, that's true, Jimmy. It's quite difficult for the local producers to stay afloat. I think it's coming from various sides, so it's not only that the demand is falling back. It is also pressure on prices as the imported product are coming in at very competitive prices. So to actually stand your chance to actually supply the market, you have to be competitive in this particular market. But with regard to the policy situation, I think although the perception is actually created that a lot of trade protection has already been afforded to the primary steel industry, but just looking at the result is that it hasn't had much effect on the import and the volumes that are actually coming into the country. So I think a lot can be done around the policy side as well.
Charles, when we look at the likes of the Dinson Iron and Steel Company that's set to do some wonders in Zimbabwe and potentially the parent company behind that being a Chinese parent company that is the largest stainless steel or one of the largest stainless steel producers in the world, that poses a new set of challenges and a new set of threats, because if we're still going to be importing and now you've got a company that's looking to do 600,000 tons a year in steel production, that obviously means the likes of our local ArcelorMittals and other steel manufacturers here would have a difficult time. How do we, looking at the country's picture of wanting to industrialize and wanting to turn, in the president's words, wanting to turn South Africa into a construction site, the steel sector is a critical part of those infrastructure development ambitions. How do we protect that sector so that after infrastructure development happens, we actually have a steel sector to come back to?
I think the biggest challenge for the steel sector at this point in time is to move away from commodities and actually to start adding value to the steel product itself. If one look at the Dinson steel mill, it's actually just filling the gap in the SADC region and to a significant magnitude. So although they are currently producing 600,000 tons, the end state will be about 3.5 million tons that they will be supplying into a current market that is about 8 million tons in demand in SADC, with the South African productive capacity at 8.8 million tons. So it will just add to surplus capacity in this region. So the only way that you will actually be safeguarded against the commodity trade in the country is to focus on value add, to do the more sophisticated product lines and to go further downstream in the production of steel.
This brings up the topic of beneficiation, and this is something we've long spoken about, whether you're looking at the steel sector or the gold sector or the platinum sector, to say that in creating more opportunities in South Africa, we should be looking at beneficiation and looking at processing the raw materials that we have in South Africa, not simply exporting them. Charles, when we look at that, how does that fit into expanding the steel sector, creating more jobs, creating more opportunities, going back to the days where we used to have factories and things that used to produce products in South Africa? Is this something that we can still get done in this day and age, especially with all the technological advances that are out there?
I really think so, Jimmy. It is when you look at the primary steel production side, you can actually produce as much as you like, but if you don't have the downstream to sell to, then you haven't got a market. So you need to develop your downstream market in value addition. And therefore, I agree 100% that we need to beneficiate as much as we can, going the furthest downstream that is possible to create the market that we're looking for. And that goes for the rest of Africa as well, not only for South Africa.
Charles, do you think that from a government perspective and from a policy perspective, offering like protectionist concessions towards local manufacturers would encourage them as well to look at things differently and say, look, if we are creating new industries and we're creating new sectors of the economy, then as local players, we should be afforded the first right to access these before the importers?
Yes, I think that is that is true, and that is where the policy uncertainty is actually coming in, is that I think South Africa is lacking a vision with regard to where they want to go with beneficiation and the steel industry. Once that is achieved, then all policies should be aligned to actually achieve that. And that is exactly what the Chinese has done. And also, if you look at all the developed nations in the world, Taiwan and what Taiwan has done is exactly that exact route where they actually aimed at the final product and then developed the best practice to achieve that. And I think that is the way that South Africa should also go.
The steel sector continues to wait on policy certainty to avoid an existential threat. Hopefully someone out there is listening. Hopefully we get this on the road and we get it done, because we can ill afford to lose more jobs in the economy that we have here. We'll leave the conversation there. Charles, thanks so much for the insights and for the time. Charles Dedenham, Secretary General of the South African Iron and Steel Institute, on the state of the steel industry as well as the potential threat that could be coming from our northern borders.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
African Bank Holdings Limited gave us an update on their year that was. They gave us their financial results for the financial year ended September 2024. Bright and early, just before 8:30 this morning, they gave us that SENS announcement. I'm joined on the line by the company's group CEO, Kennedy Bungani, to take a look at the performance of the bank and what we make of it at this stage. Dr. Bungani, good evening. Lovely to catch up with you. It's been a minute. Accelerate 25. That's something you and I have spoken about in the past before. That's something that's been the cornerstone of this entire bank's rebuild. Take me through the year that was. Take me through the reflections of the year and what you and the team make of it.
Again, thanks for having me, my brother. I thought you had forgotten about me, seeing that you rub shoulders with the high and mighty these days.
Oh, we could never.
Well, as you rightly put it, Accelerate 25 has been a direction of travel over the last four or so years. It's simply been about appreciating the retail unsecured lending business that has been African Bank for the better part of three decades, but wanting to diversify and grow into a much more fully-fledged retail and business bank that offers diverse revenues, de-risked balance sheet that's got scale and is sustainable. This path has led us to strengthen the core of our retail franchise by building in tech device financing, secured lending, transactional banking, and offering much more to consumers who have appreciated us by increasing their numbers from 1.1 million in 2021 to over 5.4 million retail customers today. Over and above that, we've expanded the core of our business using acquisitions to get into supporting entrepreneurs, business and commercial businesses out there through what we got as capabilities from Kindred Bank, Sesfin businesses, etc., etc. So that has been our strategy. That's been our direction of travel. The results we announced today speak volumes about how timely and how useful this strategy has been, because we're reporting that our lending businesses to consumers is actually down 10%. Our net interest income is down 10%, but we've able to report solid performance because we've grown our non-interest revenues by 40% to 1.5 billion. We've grown our insurance business by 14% to 812 business. giving evidence to the importance of having the diverse revenue streams that are able to pump when credit extension conditions aren't great.
It certainly has been quite the turnaround story, and you and I have been catching up on it at various moments in time. I remember the last time you and I spoke about that Grindrod Bank acquisition you brought up. That was the acquisition had just kind of been concluded, but the integration was still being done. And it seems now in this financial year, this latest year, we finally fully integrated the Grindrod Bank into the African Bank family. And now the focus is on the other things like the Sasfin acquisitions and everything else that's in the pipeline. Have you, looking back at what's been happening with the Grindrod integration and all the other prospects that you've got in the pipeline, is the team kind of comfortable with saying we kind of know how to navigate this integration space better?
Oh, you're so correct, my brother. Regulators do take their time to approve these things, to look through them. They're very thorough, and so should they be. And we should go back and say that, you know, in 2022, we acquired UBank. We integrated it successfully into our personal banking business, and the business that had made losses over 2 years, we're able to integrate it successfully, turn it around, and it has reinforced our offering in personal banking. Very successful, some good lessons learned with that process. The final approval of Grindrod to be divisionalized happened, as you correctly put, only a few months ago, in fact, around August. We had spent over a year integrating that business as part of African Bank, and it has been able to really be the power behind these numbers that we are reporting today, enabling us to not just box with one hand in consumer banking or personal banking, but also support entrepreneurs. We've taken a lot of this muscle around successful integrations and used it in integrating the Sasfin businesses that we've recently acquired. They are a commercial property, they are capital equipment businesses. All of these banks that we now bring together actually give us capabilities that enable us to back entrepreneurs in a scalable way, to back entrepreneurs throughout their businesses. And so that is what we take away from what these acquisitions have been about. We now have a chance of really seeing that customer-centric, data and digitally enabled business that backs businesses in the middle of the pyramid of corporate structure in this country.
Kennedy, one of the things that you and I have kind of loosely spoken about on and off air is the unique position that African Bank finds itself in, having seemingly been resurrected from a bank that previously had a lot of volatility within it. And something you and I touched on in a lot of detail was around ensuring stability and calm and confidence within the business. I'm looking at the balance sheet. I'm looking at liquidity still staying strong. The numbers where they move, they do not impact the liquidity of the business. How important is it for you and a management team now looking ahead to 2025 and the listing that we'll get to in a second? How important is it for the business to have that stable grounding to be able to say we can now stand on our own, we fixed all the things that were previously involved in the previous bank. We are no longer that African bank, but we're a focused team.
No, I'm so glad you mentioned this. So let's break it down a little bit. Our gross advances in unsecured lending have actually come down year on year. We refused to be forced to lend when our customers disposable income was under pressure. We had enough of the capabilities we've just built in Accelerate 25 to support our customers through other means and then still be able to bank them through this time. So our net interest income is down 10%. If we had not diversified, Jimmy, that would be the only story to talk about this evening. 10% down because we're not extending unsecured loans in the last year or so of tough economic conditions. But because of diversification, because of the strategy that we've employed, we're able to grow secured lending, which was not here before Accelerate 25, by over 14% to over 1.5 billion. We're able to grow fee income by over 14%. What this has done is that even through these tough times, we're able to record solid results, which protect our capital buffers at over 31.4%, which protects our liquidity surplus at over 7 billion. And this enables us to have optionality as a bank. It brings resilience into the system. It has de-risked the balance sheet and the sustainability. So you can then avoid the big troughs and highs of the previous African bank, which only boxed with one hand, that was on secured lending. This set of results is testament of why the strategy has been correct and why it has been good for the longevity of this business going forward.
The big question, we've come to the end of the interview. We never end our interviews without me asking you this. Ntata Bongani, are we listing in 2025?
No, we're not, Jimmy. We've taken good advice from prospective investors, and they've been very clear that we've got some more work to do to ensure that we de-risk that listing, that we take away the B overhang of it, and that we work with current shareholders to ensure that staff, management are aligned with incoming new shareholders. We work with current shareholders to ensure that the BE is done and done properly so that the incoming shareholders don't have to pay for all of those imperatives. And so this year, the key milestones has been to do the employee share ownership. Every staff member at African Bank now owns part of 10% of this bank. We're working on a management scheme. We're working on a BE scheme. Once these are done, our pre-IPO work will be done. We will then have a chance in what we believe will be post the financial year 2027 to have a safe-proofed, de-risked IPO of a much smaller stake, but one that will then be available for all South Africans.
Well, you can't be surprised by that. Kennedy Bongani and his team at African Bank have always been meticulous and careful in how they've managed this turnaround, and the results of that are bearing fruit. We'll leave the conversation then. Ntata Bongani, thanks as always for the time and for the insights. Kennedy Bongani, CEO at African Bank, joining us to take a look at the performance over the last financial year and what 2025 could shape up to look like for them.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
As we wrap up the month of November, we continue to reflect on company numbers that have been coming through. Today we got the annual results for Zeda Limited for their year ended September 2024. There was a dividend to get through. There were some strong numbers to look into. And I'm joined on the line by the company's CEO, Ramasela Ganda, to take a look at the performance of the business over this particular period and see if we can make sense of it. Meganda, good evening. Thanks so much as always for the time. It's always lovely to catch up. A record year for revenues despite the challenging conditions. Revenues were still up more than 14.5% at a group level. Take me through just your initial thoughts as a team, as a management, around the performance of the year and some of the things you had to contend with.
Thank you very much and good evening to you and the listeners. Jimmy, I think one of the key issues about us is just looking back to COVID period when everything else looks so doom and gloom about our business, and we set a strategy in 2021 of saying, how do we get this business to thrive? And our strategy has definitely paid off. Looking at the results, as you've indicated, our record level revenue that we've achieved that just, you know, in the shortest period since 2019, which was our highest revenue, that we are sitting in a very comfortable position looking that the strategy really worked. And the strategy was about diversification in the mobility space. That was adding the leasing business, but focusing as well the leasing business and corporate SA, Greater Africa, and really driving heavy commercial business. And when we look back, and we knew at those time when we had a shortage of fleet, that our used car margin was deriving great and super profit. And we knew that the period will come to an end as everything that goes up will come down. But we wanted to make sure that by the time we get to that, we are well stable, and we're ready to take opportunities that are in the market. And I'm very happy today that really it has yielded the results that we saw, we're looking forward to.
Ramasela, you mentioned the used car segment, and I had a look at the numbers and just the overall performance. I mean, the clear, distinct sort of pillars of the business is that long-term leasing business, is the short-term rental business, but also that used car market. And that seems to be, out of the three, the one that came under the most amount of pressure. And I want to get your thoughts around that particular segment. As you said, you didn't expect that the sun will shine on that segment forever, and you were preparing for the eventuality that markets are cyclical. But now that segment has brought down your operating margin. It seems like a very tight operating margin as well, and we'll get to that in a second. But where's the used car market from your perspective? Is it something that you guys are looking to fully exit? Is it something that you're saying maybe the downturn is something we can sort out and fix? How are you guys seeing that segment?
Look, the downturn is actually the normality of used car. I mean, if you look at the type of margin you get in the new car, used car is still very much profitable. So when we look at this segment, we're actually saying this is a segment for growth for us, because we knew that the margins are going to normalize, and we are now in starting 2025 in a very normal base, and we're comfortable with it. So what then means is we need to diversify, you know, different solutions that we even offer in our used car, you know, to improve our second gross profit margin. So we're very much comfortable that used car needs to be a growth. We have implemented a digital dealership, which really is about, you know, you buy a vehicle online based, you know, you get a 3D view of the vehicle. We tell you the history of the vehicle. And the beauty about our vehicle is that it only has one owner, whether it's coming from the leasing business or it's coming from short-term rental. So this is driving e-commerce like it has not been seen, where you can conclude the entire transaction and the vehicle just get to be delivered to you through, and it's a used car, but we actually tell you what are the condition, where it's got scratches and bumps, and where we fixed it. And we also give you, you know, a return back guarantee. So for us is actually this is the market to grow. We just need to be innovative as we continuously become and really driving the heavy margin type of business, which is more on the retail side rather than wholesale.
It certainly is a unique advantage to have going into a market that has got quite a bit of saturation in the used car space, to be able to offer clients or prospective clients such a value-added service around that. Ramasela, I want to move to the operating margin. That's currently sitting at 14% for the business. Is that a comfortable margin? What is the kind of sort of ideal target range of where you hope to see the margin sit? And if it is that percentage, is it something that you guys are looking to grow at this point?
Look, we believe where we are, the 14% margin is one of the most good margin that you can get in our industry. And for us is to protect that margin. And with the product we're offering, both in car sales, leasing and rental, that's the margin we believe we have reached a point where we need to protect that margin. I think any increase that we are looking for is, you know, the mix that may come out of the lease car. You know, the more we see an uptake in the lease car business, in the leasing business, then you can expect a better margin that is coming from it, because that's one business with, you know, very good margins. But at 14%, feeling very comfortable that this is our margin that we can protect and grow our business within those ranges.
What about the debt? Net debt's coming down marginally, still north of the 4 billion rand mark, but coming down from last year. And at the same time, cash and cash equivalents on the book increasing quite significantly as well. So obviously the balance sheet from that perspective looks like the balancing act is going exceptionally well. The business has got a very clear focus around what you want to do there. And obviously ratios like your debt to EBITDA improve as well. How are you striking that balance to say we still want to be able to operate as freely as we have been, but we understand that some things need to take priority, like paying down the debt?
Look, I think the kind of debt that we're very clear that we needed to bring down was on a short-term rental. Other than that being a short-term debt, we always say our growth strategy and a pillar is on the leasing business, which is a long-term. So we continuously aggressively invest in the leasing business. And I think you can expect more debt coming through the leasing business. So I think we have brought our car rental debt to a level that we feel comfortable, but we definitely poised for growth in our long-term leasing business. And as you can imagine, the kind of EBITDA and the kind of equity that we have built over the 2 years since unbundling, we believe that, you know, it puts us in a good position to go and gain more debt. So, I mean, we will be going to the market to issue, you know, our first bond early next year. So debt is Zeta's favorite instrument for growth. And, you know, I think the market should expect to see an aggressive growth on our debt while we're doing it on the long-term leasing instead of the short-term rental.
I remember that was very similar to the conversation you and I had when we caught up in May as well, to say that Zeta was not afraid of debt because you actually knew how to use it for your business and how to use it for growth and expansion. Looking ahead to 2025, understanding that conditions look materially different from the pandemic, but also materially different from how they looked this year as well, how are you seeing the business landscape kind of play out? I mean, interest rates are set to come down. At what pace, you and I have no idea. But at the end of the day, you still have a business to run and a business to meet targets for throughout the year. Are you optimistic around the local conditions, first of all? And are you tempted to look beyond the borders of South Africa for some of your expansionary efforts in that long-term leasing space?
Look, very optimistic. I mean, when I look at the short-term rental business and we look at forward reservation that indicate, you know, the market that will be coming to South Africa for this December holiday is looking very promising, is really looking great. And I think local consumers with this, just even with the 50 basis point that we've seen in this current financial year, it has really boosted, you know, the market. So I expect that, you know, from a retail point of view, we should be seeing a very booming Christmas season. So very excited about the prospect of it. And there's definitely positive sentiment. I mean, we see on the order book, you know, how the market is looking at growing the fleet. So we're looking forward to a very bumper year when it comes to leasing book. So both from private and public sector, we've been doing serious focus on getting back into the public sector, that we have not been in a public sector for a long time. And that is our key focus as to how to get ourselves back into the public sector. And we're very optimistic about that opportunity. Greater Africa, as we are aware that we have announced today that we'll be divesting away from Ghana. But one of the key areas is that we had one country in Southern Africa that we were not really focusing on. And Zimbabwe is now our focus point. And we're getting fully in Zimbabwe. We used to be in Zimbabwe some time back on short-term rental, but you know, when we look at the mining business, that is a country for us to really grow into it from a leasing. So you should expect some growth. And our growth, you know, is really to a large extent depend on our license with the Avis budget group. And the expansion can be well beyond Africa. And any opportunity that comes from that side, you know, we assess it to see if there's a country that we want to go into. And if it makes sense to us, we'll definitely go into it. So, yes, our expansion, you know, when you look at our equity, where it's sitting, and when you look at our debt capital structure, we are ready for even inorganic growth.
Poised for growth and absolutely optimistic about all conditions that will go into the new year. We'll leave the conversation there, Maganda. Thanks so much for the time and for the insights. Always lovely catching up with you. That was Ramasela Ganda, who is the CEO at Zeta Limited, joining me to reflect on their full year ended September 2024, as well as how the 2025 year could potentially be shaping up for them.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And because it's Tuesday, we have a property feature this week, but we're going to do things a little differently. We're going to use the property feature to take a look at a property company. A real estate investment trust called Vukile gave us their half year numbers for the half year ended the 30th of September 2024. That is Vukile Property Fund Limited, for those who don't know. Trades on the JSE under various ticker codes. You can find it there. And I'm joined on the line by the company's CEO, as always, Lawrence Rapp, to take a look at the performance in the first half of the year and make sense of it. Good evening, Lawrence. Lovely to catch up with you, as always. A strong start to the new financial year for you. A couple of things that are noteworthy there, obviously, like-for-like net operating income growth. There's growth from the retail portfolio. There's a reduction in the vacancies, or a containment in the vacancies. All in all, looks like a strong start to the new financial year. How are you reflecting on the new start?
Hi, Jimmy. Thanks very much for having me on the show. Absolutely. I think you've covered a number of the key metrics. We really are delighted with all the key metrics in both South Africa and Spain. It's been a very, very strong first 6 months. And I think there is a tremendous amount of optimism from us. You know, when you take the strong operating performance of the business together with what's an improving macro environment and starting to get a few tailwinds coming in, we think that sets us up for sort of a very good, not only next 6 months, but certainly into the future. We think the business is very well positioned for some good growth.
The business certainly is well positioned, and we'll get into some of these other metrics. I mean, I, for one, want to look at the available cash on hand, but we'll get to that in a second. Lawrence, let's start with the acquisitions and disposals. There was a couple of movements throughout the year from a business perspective, a couple of interests that were sold, but also some acquisitions that you guys are or in the process of finalizing, I'd imagine. Take me through some of those movements and how you're picking them at the moment.
Sure. So, Jimmy, it's really teeing up to be quite a transformative year for Vukile. So, on the smaller end of the scale, we exited our stake in Fairvest for about 140 million rand. That was a non-core holding. We did very well out of that over the years. And that money will be redeployed into our solar PV rollout. And, you know, that will start coming through in the second half of the year. On the bigger end has been the decision to exit our stake in Lar España, which is a competing fund in Spain that we own about just under 29% of. And we received an offer there of, along with the market, of €8.10 a share. We were able to negotiate it up to €8.30. And we felt that that would be a very good level at which to exit. We make a tremendous capital profit of around 70 million euros. In addition to that, we've received 38 million euros of dividends since we've held it. So that investment will generate an IRR of around 40% in euros in the 2.5 years that we've held it. And the reason for exiting really is that we felt we could actually rather redeploy the money into some very strong physical assets at attractive yields with good growth prospects, where there's sort of less deal execution risk in getting that done. So we have identified some assets where that money is going to go. Unfortunately, the asset that we are looking to buy was impacted by the flooding in Valencia. So we have postponed that transaction and extended the exclusivity. It's still very much our intention to buy the asset. And the news flow, in fact, has been much more positive than we were expecting in terms of the level of damage and also the time taken to reinstate that asset. So all things being equal, we hope to have that deal closed early in 2025 and certainly within this current financial year. Then moving on, we bought three assets in Portugal, which were effective 1 October. That's our entry into Portugal. So we bought those three assets for 176 million euros. We've used about 35% local debt in country debt. The balance is equity off our balance sheet. And that's at a very attractive yield of around 10% cash on cash in euros. So that really is a very lucrative deal for us, and we see good growth prospects. And then finally, there are a couple of other assets we are quite far advanced on in Portugal to look to add to that portfolio and start building critical mass in that market as well. So as I said, it really is teeing up for a quite a transformational year. We need a bit of luck, as always, in closing things out, but we've got a very clear action plan as to what needs to be done in the next few months.
Lawrence, I want to look at that La España business. You mentioned, of course, that you have decided to dispose of it, and one would then obviously ask, you just earned 378 million odd rand in dividend income from that, and that alongside the 6% increase in dividend per share you were able to pay back to customers in the form of the cash interim dividend suggests that getting rid of a dividend asset like that might not be a good idea. But as you said, you've got other plans for the capital and other plans to generate those returns for investors. From a business's perspective, when you are operating in more than one geographical region, how do you then balance out things like getting that dividend return to a client or to investors, but at the same time understanding that some regions are very new to you? Some regions you don't have any say in what happens in those regions. For example, the natural events that happened in Valencia.
Well, Jimmy, look, number one, you know, natural events, acts of God can happen anywhere and everywhere in the world. You know, you've got to make sure that you're appropriately insured and that you've done your homework in terms of how susceptible are you to these natural events. But to your point, you know, when we decided to sell the La España stake, we knew how much money we were earning in terms of dividend income from that. Quite clearly, the first objective we have is to find an opportunity that's going to replace at least that amount of same dividend income. Now, the asset that we are buying will do exactly that and more. So buying in Spain for us really is second nature. You know, we've been operating there now for 7 or 8 years. We've got a team of nearly 40 people who are all locals. So we know and understand that market as well as we understand South Africa. So buying an income-producing asset really is the easiest way to replace that income. And we are very confident that, you know, that that will happen seamlessly. You know, to the extent of things out of your control, well, you know, who knew that COVID was going to happen and hit the world? Who knew that riots were going to impact in South Africa? I think that's in the nature of business risk, what you need to manage. I think you do that through diversification, through other mitigants such as insurance. And provided you've got sort of a well-diversified, strong set of cash flows, you generally can manage through these difficult periods. And I feel very confident. Remember, the assets that we're talking about, we don't own. We are trying to buy it. And the flooding happened before we actually purchased the assets. So in a sense, we got lucky from that respect. But we feel that this asset will be reinstated fairly quickly and will continue to trade as well as what it has historically. So it's one that we will continue to do our homework on, but all things being equal, it will be an addition to our portfolio by the next time we speak.
Lawrence, when we kind of look at the business from a balance sheet perspective, typically when you're looking at real estate investment trusts and companies in the space that you operate in, an ideal sort of loan-to-value ratio sits around anywhere between 30 and 40%. You've managed to get yours down to 35.4%. I remember when you and I spoke the last time, you said that that was a key focus for the business to be able to kind of maintain that at a stable rate. But that's one small figure. When I look at that compared to the fact that you have 5.1 billion rand in cash balances available, that's saying that the balance sheet is more than comfortable.
Yeah, Jimmy, I think you are absolutely spot on with your analysis. I think far too much attention gets given to one number. Balance sheet strength is a composite number. It's LTV, it's interest cover ratio, it's liquidity, its debt expiry profile, its providers of finance, etc. So when you look at all of those measures together, the Vukile balance sheet is exceptionally strong. And I think it's very important for me to say the following. It's not good enough for me simply to say that to your listeners. But when you look at what the credit rating agencies are saying about Vukile, they've given us a AA rating in South Africa. It's one of the strongest credits in South Africa. Castellana has an investment grade credit rating by Fitch. And I think, you know, when you sort of see the success that Vukile has had in the debt capital markets in terms of having very heavily subscribed, oversubscribed debt issuances at always decreasing margins, you can see how strong the credit markets rate our credit overall in our balance sheet. So, yes, we are absolutely comfortable that the balance sheet is very, very strong. With 5.1 billion of cash, it means that we are able to execute on those transactions that I spoke to you about earlier. And, you know, we feel that having that firepower allows you to go into deals, giving the sellers an element of certainty because you have the ability to close. And that often allows you to get better pricing in the deals. And I think we're seeing that, for example, in that first entry into Portugal with yields of around 10% cash on cash.
6.4 billion rand firepower is certainly something to go into the second half of the year in a comfortable position with. We'll leave the conversation there, Lawrence. We wish you the best of luck for the second half of the year. I, for one, am excited to see what you guys pick up by way of assets, and we're looking forward to catching up with you later in the year. We'll leave the conversation there. That's Lawrence Rapp, CEO at Vukile Property Fund Limited, joining us to take a look at their first half of the new financial year and the fact that that balance sheet is looking quite healthy.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Just like that, folks, we've come to the end of the show. It's coming up to 7 o'clock. Greg Hose is standing by to give you the latest round in evening news, followed by the top sport team. And you know what that means from my side. Good night.